everybody. I'm Sean from Follow the Camino. I would like to welcome you to another episode of Camino Talks. I'm here with Tom Cartwright from Camino Gin. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Hi, Sean. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for joining in. So before we kind of start talking about the Camino and gin and all those topics, maybe can you just give me a background on who you are?
Yeah, certainly. So my name's Tom Cartwright. I'm 24 and I live in Wilmslow in Cheshire. I first did the Camino in 2016. I walked to the Camino Francis alone, and it was proved to be probably one of the most amazing experiences of my life. Since returning back from the Camino, I've been working in various different jobs, quite involved with like cocktails and the bartending industry. And then at the start of this year, during lockdown, it was when I really had a massive kind of change of direction, and that was when I started properly putting my dream of Camino Gin into practice, really. So, yeah.
Okay, great, thank you. So, you said you first did the Camino Francés. Now, I was reading on your website that you dropped out of university and you were at a loose end. So, why was that, and why did you decide to go walking for 500 miles?
Yeah, well, it was I was studying down in Bath. I started off doing a business studies degree, but it just didn't really feel like me. I then tried again doing a philosophy degree, which also didn't really feel like me. So I dropped out of that, and I was working in a small shop in the town. And I sort of, I just very much felt like, you know, I'd tried two different courses. I didn't really know what I was going to do. I was starting to thinking of, you know, maybe joining the Navy or becoming a carpenter. And there was loads of these ideas buzzing around my head. And I had a friend of mine who, you know, the year before, and he started talking to me about this. He was saying, "Oh, just, you know, get out there. It's a fantastic experience. Just, you know, just clear your head effectively out there." So then I started looking into it a little bit and stumbled across the film The Way, which I'm sure many, many people have seen,
yes,
which inspired them to go out there. And then from watching that and reading up a bit more about it, that was the main decision to go out there.
So watching The Way, why did that then appeal to you? Because I imagine you hadn't done much kind of walking previously.
It was sort of all the different, like, spiritual aspects of all the symbolism, and also the just that the massive walk by yourself, really, just to kind of, because obviously in day to day life things, you know, especially where I live in near to Manchester as well, like, things are very hectic and there's always lots of people. You're always on your phone with all loads of social media stuff. So it was nice to really see something where I could go and just completely almost disconnect from all that and just iron out a load of things that I wanted to try and iron out, really, within myself.
Okay, and did you walk the full way from the Spanish-French border to Santiago?
I did, yeah. I started in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port and finished in Santiago. I wanted to go on to Finisterre, but I couldn't. I had to come back and get squeezed for time.
So what were your first impressions, say your first day or two walking? Was it as you expected? What were your thoughts?
I don't really know what I expected, because when I got there, I was probably a bit nervous. I sort of felt like, oh, I don't know, what have I actually got myself into? Because I was there by myself, and at the time I was 18, 19 as well. So I was quite young, and I hadn't really done much of anything like this before. So yeah, I was quite nervous, really. But then when I got on the train and eventually arrived at Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, it was awesome, really, seeing all these people in rucksacks get off the train, thinking, wow, all these people doing what I'm doing. And loads of them, like me, were doing it alone. So I met quite a few people in the hostel that first night, and that sort of set it to ease. And then the first day, so when you walk into Roncesvalles over the French Pyrenees, it's a serious climb, and I think that was when it sort of sat into me, and I was like, oh no, this is what I'm in for. But just taking it slow and steady, really.
Yeah, I think from what I hear talking to other people, that the first day is actually probably one of the hardest days of the Camino, so it maybe gives you a false sense of what the Camino is.
Yeah, okay. Definitely.
And did you tend to kind of walk with the same people each day that you met in the hostel, or did you start off on your own, or how did you progress each day?
I started off each day. It was a mix, really. I had there were times where So I started off and I was walking for a day really with an English lady who I met at the hostel. And then I carried on walking with a Danish father and son who I met out there. Then there was periods where I was walking by myself, but then eventually there was a group of these three girls from California who I sort of linked up with and spent a good couple of weeks with them. So you sort of find your group, I guess, throughout it.
Yeah. And did you do any training before you started, or did you just arrive and start walking?
To be honest, I just sort of arrived and started walking. I didn't really do too much training. I think if I went back now, I'd definitely need to do some training. But at the time, it was just taking it easy. So started off with a small amount every day, because there's so many different places you can stop off at, and refuel yourself with tortillas and orange juice and coffees and stuff. It was I took it quite easy in the start, to be honest.
Okay, and you said one of the reasons you went there was to kind of clear your head and kind of decide what's next. So did you come to that kind of conclusion or decision?
Not really. When I came back, things is sort of you come back and you're so excited about the experiences that you had. I think that's why so many people write books, they write poems, they write all and create all these wonderful things in testament to that month or so experience that they've had. It's such a powerful almost spiritual experience. So when I came back, I was feeling full of the Camino in my everyday life. I was walking around Bath, and I was speaking to strangers, I was smiling at people a lot more than I would have done before. But then I think it, as the years have gone by, it's sort of you kind of slip back into your normal groove a little bit. That's why I want to get back out there again as soon as I can, really, and refresh that.
Okay. And so obviously we're here to talk about also Camino Gin, your business. So you said on your website you kind of discovered or came across botanicals that obviously make up gin. So what happened on the Camino that kind of started you thinking about kind of gin making?
Yeah, it was, I'd say, the first sort of inkling of the thought of making the Camino Gin kind of stemmed by all the different regions that you walk through. So before I went to the Camino, I'd only visited Spain, to like Malaga and Mallorca and these types of places, which are very beautiful in their own right. But the scenery was sort of what you'd expect. Whereas walking the Camino through the north of Spain, it's amazing. You're walking through really lush forests in the Pyrenees. You're then into lovely valleys around Rioja, and then you're onto like the Mesita, where it's almost just like arid and almost desert land. And so all these different and also obviously you walk through some fantastic food and wine regions. You're in the Basque country, you're then in to Rioja and Galicia and all these types of things, which I was spending a lot of time eating all the nice food, and I was doing quite a little bit of drinking as well, and enjoying all the wine, and it was these thoughts which sort of resonated with me, saying this is a fantastic food and drink place, and it almost feels like a bit of a secret as well.
Yes.
So as I was walking one day, this was towards the end of my trip, I met an Italian guy, and just as you do along the road, and he was foraging berries in a bush. So I was asking him, what is that? It wasn't, I don't think they were blackberries, I can't remember what they were, but it was something I wasn't used to seeing. And he pulled out a book, and I can show you the book actually. I've got it here. He pulled out this book here called The Edible Camino.
Wow.
So this is and this was his reference book for how to forage in it, and it's fantastic. It includes 70 or so different plants, mushrooms, flowers, all sorts of things that you can pick from the path and eat. And that was the thing that got me thinking I could take some of these and really create something beautiful with it. And that's what led me to the gin.
So my recollection of the Camino is obviously lots of nice food and lots of nice wine. I don't kind of, gin doesn't come into my head much as having seen that in Spain as much. So,
yep.
Was it popular, or was this kind of an idea that developed afterwards?
It was more an idea that developed afterwards. I think in the time that's passed since I visited the Camino, because I know Spanish is one of the biggest gin consumers. Spain is one of the biggest gin consuming countries in the world. And the Spanish gin and tonics, in the lovely big balloon glass,
yes,
they put loads of stuff in. And it's, but actually on the Camino, I didn't really see too much gin around. It was more the wine and the food. was the focus. But the reason why I chose gin and to work with gin is, well, two reasons really. I live very close to a really good small distillery called the Big Hill Distillery. And these guys, you know, traditional copper still, they produce like really fine, high quality spirits. So I wanted to create something and kind of tying into that. And gin as a spirit is something that, a London dry gin is something that is synonymous with the England as well and the UK. So I wanted to push on that side. And it's a thing that you can be a bit more playful with in regards to the other spirits, so whiskey and rum and all that. They have a very defined flavor profile, whereas gin, you can, you know, it's all about the botanicals, it's all yes. about the flowers. And for me, the Camino, a large part of it was all about those lovely smells, that all that wonderful scenery, so and all the different tastes. So I wanted to try and, you know, get pull all these things together and see if I could give off similar aromas to things that I remembered, give off similar tastes to things that I experienced, be it sort of like, you know, the grassiness of the forest, or kind of the nice sweetness of the figs and the smells of the lavender, and all that is condensed, if you like, inside of the gin.
Okay, so can you maybe just describe very briefly how gin is created?
Yep. So what we do is at the Big Hill Distillery, they have a 130-litre copper still, and they do something there called single-shot distilling. And that's where you basically distill the whole thing all in one go. So they buy in the raw alcohol, which is usually at a really high percent, like 94% ABV. It's then poured in the still, and all the different botanicals. I've got a little basket full of them here. But all these, all the different botanicals get put into the copper still with the alcohol, and then macerates in there for a period of about 24 to 36 hours. That allows the alcohol to draw out all the nice different flavors from the botanicals. Then once that's done, they fire up the still. They then place almost like a bouquet garnet you put in a stew, if you like. They put a nice big one of them into the neck of the still, which then further vapor infuses it as the liquid travels up the column. And then it travels through the distillation. And then at the other end, you get a very high percentage, again, hot gin, if you like. The gin is then taken from that, and it's mixed with filtered water to then bring down the percentage to the 40% ABV. But it's quite a complex process, because different botanicals, because of their structure, they let out their flavor and essences at different stages. So it has to be monitored and tasted all the time. It's fascinating seeing it happen, but yeah, you have to constantly, you know, taste all this neat gin and put in the water yourself. So it's very cool.
So I understand your gin has 17 different botanicals, and you say about at least 13 of those from the Camino region. So how did you decide what botanicals to include, and how did you get them? Did you go back out to Spain to kind of find them, or what was your process?
I would, because of this lockdown that we're under, I would have absolutely loved to have gone out there and contacted the guys who wrote this book and see if they could come with me and forage from the path, which is something that I plan on doing as soon as I'm able to. But I sourced these using a botanical merchant based in London. And so the process was, because in this book there's about 70 different plants, flowers and mushrooms, I selected about 30 of those to experiment with. And over a period of, you know, months and ages, we were just experimenting with different flavor profiles until eventually we got to the 17 that we have today. And the reason for that is we didn't want to just jam everything in to give it sort of like, you know, just to make it like a gimmicky thing. We wanted to really refine it and make it a nice, complex, layered London dry gin. So when you taste it, you know, you can smell different things, you can pick out different things when you taste it as well. And so that's why we got the 17 that we chose today.
Okay. And do you kind of mix them and taste and smell them before you put them in gin, or are you kind of constantly kind of creating small batches of gin with different?
A mix of stuff. So we have a 2 litre copper still, just a small like tabletop still, which we do a lot of experimenting with. But before then, there was a period of just macerating these in existing vodkas and things like that, just so I can steep in them in a kilner jar, if you like, just so you can get the flavors and a bit of an idea of taste as well.
Okay. So how you went to Big Hill Distillery. How do you convince the distillery that you're somebody with no track record in gin to produce a batch and actually, I presume, go to a lot of effort for you? How does that happen?
That's a very good question. How did that happen? It was mainly sort of the idea, I guess, and I think our brands fit so well together. So the Big Hill Distillery make a gin, and they've won loads of awards internationally with it. It's called Spirit of George Gin, and it's a testament to George Mallory, who was the guy who first ascended Everest, and he was born in Mobley in Cheshire. And so this gin, and it's a lovely London dry gin made with different botanicals that come from Nepal. So that's their connection to the Himalayas. And because their gin was all about, you know, an overseas adventure, but here in Cheshire, using really traditional craft distilling techniques. And my concept was a gin inspired by travels overseas. Obviously, you know, not quite a high cup Everest, but still an adventure on foot. And that was kind of the main thing that linked us together, really. And that was one of the main reasons why I chose to do it with the Big Hill Distillery. Because like you say, I myself, I'm a passionate food and drink enthusiast, but I'm not a distiller by trade. So I needed to create something that was, I didn't want to do this half-heartedly. I wanted to create a really beautiful spirit that truly was a homage to the way. So that's why I went to the Big Hill Distillery, because I knew those guys could help me achieve it.
Cool. Awesome. So how many bottles did you eventually produce, and how have sales gone, or what are you doing with the business?
So the first batch was 720 bottles is what we made, and so far it's been good. I launched it with a restaurant based in Liverpool called Pilgrim, and Pilgrim made by these guys. One of them, he actually walked to the Camino Frances, I think the year after me in 2017, came back home, and he had a restaurant concept and all about creating dishes from along the Camino. So as you're eating through the menu, you're kind of starting off kind of towards France, and you finish in Santiago.
Yes.
And he's opened his restaurant, which has become very successful, in Duke Street in Liverpool. So that was the perfect place to launch it. So it's been launched there, and but obviously the lockdown came again, which has delayed a number of things with the restaurants. But web sales have been quite good, and just getting the word out, really, just trying to promote it and spread the word at the moment.
And what are your kind of plans over the coming 2-3 years? Is this your full-time role now, or how do you see it progressing?
Yeah, no, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it progress into that, really, and do different things. So one of the main kind of personal drives behind this is I wanted to make something to do with the Camino, my full-time job. And so I see myself I want to create a range of Camino gins. So this one is the Frances with the botanical profile, very unique to the Camino France. I want to go out and do the North Route in May, so I could, and the coastal one. So there'll be a lot of different plants and flowers that grow near the sea, the different seaweeds, and see if I can pull together a coastal gin based on the North Route, and then eventually maybe the long one all the way from Seville and loads of
Via de la Plata. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah. So I'd love to, and through this as well, it's not just about harnessing the Camino to sell gin, if you like. I want to sort of, through gin, promote the Camino, because it's been such a massive thing in my own life. I want to try and inspire others to walk on it as well and travel out there. And so that's so through doing it, I hope to one day release little guidebooks focused on the food and drink side of the Camino, and maybe even one day myself go out there and speak to people out there about it and all that sort of stuff. That's the plan.
Okay, very good. And are you kind of planning your next kind of batch?
Yes, the next batch is being started tomorrow. Another 720, which will be ready. I think the 7th or 8th of December it will be ready. So then I'll be on to bottling, labeling, waxing, all of that, and then hopefully get that out before Christmas.
And do you do the label design yourself, or how did that come about? Or that?
Yes, I've got one. I've got a bottle here actually to show you. So the label we've designed quite specifically. There's a lot of different symbolism in the label, as you can see. So the label shape itself is the upside down shell for obvious reasons. Yeah. You've then got the yellow arrow, and then we've got the little stars above the Camino logo, and those stars are representative of the Compostela and the Camino as it runs under the Milky Way. We have the map line here from Saint Jean Pierre de Port to Santiago de Compostela, and little footsteps dotted all around, as well as the sword of Saint James and a pilgrim's gourd as well, to reference the water carriers.
So basically all the symbols of the Camino in one label.
That was the plan. It was trying to make it, but without trying to make it too obvious. We tried to hide it a little bit. But for the Camino enthusiast, if you like, they're there if you look closely.
Yeah, I think the yellow arrow will be obviously, that's synonymous with anybody that walks on the Camino. Like, you see these arrows all along the paths through every single town, village.
Yeah.
Very good, very good.
Thank you.
And so the Camino, is it well known in kind of the area of England that you're in, Cheshire and northern kind of parts?
I would say not particularly. I've not really. A lot of people I've spoken to, it's been from discussing the gym with them, it's been the first time that they've heard about it, and it's great. A couple of my restaurant customers have said that, you know, from learning about the gym, they've been then researching the Camino, and they themselves are planning on doing it, which is the whole plan really. So that's quite cool.
Very good. So you find yourself having to explain to people what the name means and why you've done it, which I guess is a good way to get their interest going.
Yeah. No, that's it. That's spent quite a lot of time doing that, and that's one of the main reasons for the bringing out the website as well, just so there's more information on there if people want to learn a little bit more about the story on the Camino as well.
Okay, so you said you're hoping to get back out on the Camino del Norte next May. Are you confident that will happen?
I don't know. Hopefully, hopefully we'll all be vaccinated and it'll all be safe to travel out there. All being well, I'd love to get out there in May.
Because that is a beautiful part of the country as well. You've got, and it's very kind of related to food. You've got San Sebastian, Santander, Bilbao. It's an amazing scenery there, an amazing part of the country.
That'd be incredible. I think I heard San Sebastian or something. It's got like some of the best restaurants in the world all concentrated into one city.
Yeah, lovely kind of world-famous tapas restaurants and so on and so forth.
Yeah, no, I'd love to spend some time there, definitely.
Okay. Before we finish up, Tom, do you have any kind of unusual, or I'm sure you have very many lasting memories of your time in the Camino, but do you have anything unusual that really stands out? Or
I'd say some of the main things for me are just the people I met, really. The people I met. I met a guy who was 83, and he's an artist. He lives in Barcelona. And I think he told me he's worked this. When I met him, it was his 33rd Camino. Walks it every single year since he was 50. And he was saying, he was an old man walking with his stick, and he took it, very, very slowly. But that was he really claimed that the Camino and walking that trail every single year was the reason why he's still fit and strong and healthy at that age, which was very, very impressive. I met a guy who had walked in a pair of Converse shoes from Austria. I think he lived near Obergurgl in Austria, and he'd been walking for months and months, and he was sleeping outside as well the whole entire way with his dog. So this, you meet some fantastically, inspiring characters out there, and it just puts loads of stuff into perspective. Really, it's awesome. Highly recommend it, definitely.
And have any of your friends done it since? Like, have you managed to persuade them that it's what the thing to do?
I had a friend who I spoke to about it. I'm not sure if I persuaded him, but he went out there and he did the I think he did the Camino del Norte, and I've had another friend who's done the Camino Portugues from Porto. I myself attempted the Camino Portugues from Porto, yes. but ended up coming back shortly after Barcelos for a number of reasons. So that's another one I want to try and get out of. But yeah, it's just going to keep on trying to spread the word, really.
Yeah, and I wish you all the best of luck. And I think you have got a good concept, and I think your idea of capturing the kind of the tastes and smells from the various Camino routes and producing kind of different types of gin that reflect those areas, I think that's kind of quite compelling. And I'm sure you will have plenty of success.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much.
So I'd like to thank you for your time, Tom. I really appreciate that. And I wish you all the best with Camino Gin. And obviously people can find it on CaminoGin.com. Yep. I'm sure we'll be hearing more from you in the future.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Cheers, Tom.